What was it like to hear about the JFK assassination? Or America's triumph over Hitler? We're seeing Queen at Live Aid. Our past is a collection of stories that bring us to now. Welcome to the Eyewitness History Podcast, where we view history through the eyes of the people that watch the events that shaped our world. Here's your host, Josh Cohen, and these are their stories.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in. I am your host, Josh Cohen. This episode, I have the pleasure of speaking with Jordan Harbinger. Now, you may be familiar with Jordan. Jordan Harbinger is a Wall Street lawyer turned podcast interviewer with an approachable style and knack for securing high-profile guests. His podcast, The Jordan Harbinger Show, was selected as part of Apple's Best of 2018. He also ran a tour company that took Westerners to North Korea via China and has spent significant time in the country. The tours were supervised from beginning to end by North Korean miners and tour guides. Here, we discuss in detail his experience in North Korea. And now I give you Jordan Harbinger. Okay, I'm here with Jordan Harbinger. Jordan, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I will have done a proper intro of you, Jordan, by the time our listeners hear this.
You better.
Yeah. Well, our listeners should know I am talking, in fact, with the Jordan Harbinger of Fire Festival fame and, of course, the Jordan Harbinger Show. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the man behind all those problems you saw. They were all my fault.
We can thank Mr. Harbinger.
You know, it's funny you should say that because did you know that I had a call right before this with Billy McFarlane from Firefest? That's just a coincidence.
right before this interview?
Literally, I was like, hey, I got to run. I have a podcast. And he's like, no problem. I'll talk to you later.
That is hilarious.
Yeah, I don't want to give more detail than that because it's an upcoming thing. I'm not planning Firefest 2.0, just so you know. But I'll leave it there. But it's very coincidental that you mentioned that when that was the person I talked to seconds before this conversation.
That is hilarious. I love it. You know, I'm sure some listeners might be interested, Jordan, in wondering why you're on a history podcast. And the answer to that implied question is, obviously, you ran a tour company that ran Westerners through North Korea. We would, of course, know it as the DPRK. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
Yes, but the least democratic country in the world.
And the least republic, and certainly not for the people.
Right. Yeah, so, that's all true.
Yep. So I want to kick us off there then, Jordan. I'd like to ask you if you can describe the experience of touching down in North Korea for the first time.
Yeah, it's wild because at first, you know, you're in China. You have to go through China or Malaysia, but generally through Beijing. You're in China and you're at the airport in Beijing and you're thinking, all right, we're going to North Korea, but you don't really know what you're in for, of course, because you've never been there. And you get to an airport gate that looks just like every other gate in the airport, except it says Pyongyang and the airline is different. It's usually Air Koryo, which only flies to and from North Korea. It's owned by North Korea. There's only one airline in the whole country and it's owned by the state. And they only have flights to, I think, Malaysia and where else? One or two to Russia, I think, you know, Vladivostok kind of thing, one or two to China. There's not a whole lot more outside of that. I may be missing something, but I'm not sure that I am. It's just the Hermit Kingdom for a reason.
Sure.
So you land, first of all, you're on the plane, and it's like this old Soviet plane that's from the 80s or earlier, which is, it sounds scarier than it is, because if you fly Delta Airlines, there's a chance you're flying on a plane from the 70s or 80s anyways, right? They use aircraft for a long, long time.
Sure.
They might change the engines or whatever, but they, you know, the plane itself is old. But they're Soviet craft, and so it's something like you've never really seen. The inside looks a little different. It's a little smaller. The air conditioning is a different type of thing. So I'll never forget it. It was hot as hell, and the air conditioning was coming down, and it was like coming down in clouds because it was really moist air. And I don't know exactly why. I'm not an HVAC expert, but they were dripping tons and tons of water because it's condensing all the hot air in the plane. Just based on how it works, you know, whereas I think American or I should say every other airline uses a plane that has a unit that takes the moisture out of the air. These don't for whatever reason. And so there's drips just coming down on every, it's raining in the aircraft basically from the AC. And the flight attendants, they walk by with their white gloves on and they have these special cloths that they use to wipe the drips off the edge, and they just keep going up and down as people are getting on the plane. And it's weird because as soon as you get in, you can't get the New York Times, and there's North Korean people on the plane with you, and there's people from China on the plane with you, and all the North Koreans sit in the back. They do not sit in the front. They do not sit with the tourists. They do not sit with the Chinese. They all sit in the back. And you can tell because they actually will sometimes close the curtain as it's a different section. But also, everyone there is dressed the same. They all have the Kim Jong-un or Kim Il-sung pin over their heart. And they're all in the back of the plane by design. And I've actually gotten seated back there because of weight issues and like, oh, your seat got messed up. Sit next to this guy. And it's an interesting experience because there's no New York Times, there's no LA Times, whatever, on the plane. They only have North Korean newspapers, but they really only have the ones for tourists that are printed probably like every couple months or something like that. And it's always just a photo of the leader on the front, basically. It's just, you know, one after the other. And it's not news. It's just press releases from a propaganda department that read like press releases from a propaganda department, such as like grain production up 20% in record harvest. And you're just like, we get it, but I still see malnourished kids walking around outside, like picking food up off the ground. But tell me more about how you have a record bumper crop this year.
Right.
You know, just nonsense like that. So you touch down finally in Pyongyang after eating like kind of a weird plastic wrapped sandwich. Airline food is the same on every airline anywhere. You get out, and when you land, you know, when you land at a normal airport, there's planes everywhere. There's guys with the little light cone handle things. There's activity. When you land in Pyongyang, there are no other planes. There's nothing else on the runway. There's no people outside. There are no lights on the building. It's always during the day, so you don't really need them. There's nothing going on. It looks like you just landed at an abandoned building. Okay. But also, there are paintings that are of Kim Jong-il and Kim Il-sung. So the original, so the leader and the leader's son, they're both dead.
Right.
And possibly now Kim Jong-un, although I haven't seen that yet because I haven't been back for a while. And they are enormous. This airport is probably several stories tall, and these paintings are sticking up, and they are larger and taller than the whole airport. So, I mean, these are like 4 or 5 story tall. Jeez. And my memory is a little hazy, so I could be exaggerating here, but they are absolutely just enormous. I remember just being like, are you freaking kidding me? There's a mural on the airport, and there's one painting of Kim Il-sung, but it's at least, if this airport is 5 stories tall, this painting is 3 to 4 stories tall.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's
insane.
It's huge, and it's the only thing that you see, and the photos online are making it look smaller than I remember it being when I landed there, but, you know, some of that's perspective from the photo that's being taken. And when you go in, there's nothing, there's no one else is in the whole airport. There's just security. And so when you get in, and it's military security, it's not like friendly looking people. They take your phone away. I think they've since stopped doing that, but they used to take your phone away from you. They'll ask if anything you have is a GPS in it. If it does, you can't bring it in. You can't bring in maps, Bibles, Korean language literature of any kind, I think. There's exceptions and the rules do change, but it's very weird. It's like they're really against like iPads with GPS, or if your camera has a GPS on it, they're like, no way, it's got to stay here in the airport, and they lock it up. And when you finally get out, there's a bus waiting for you. Again, there's usually nobody else there. And if you flew in with Chinese people, you know, their cars are waiting there. There's your minders meet you at the airport. You're not allowed to just go to North Korea and go to some resort or something like that. You get met by your tour guides immediately. Like you get out of security and you don't even leave the airport until they're like, hey, you know, you're with me. You can't roam around at all. There's no such thing as unsupervised North Korea. So we get in the bus, and what was really interesting is, you know, you get in the bus, the sun's starting to set depending on when you land, and you realize there's no street lights. So when you're driving to the hotel into the city, there's no lights at all on the road. I mean, of course you have the headlights from the bus. So when you're driving, all you see are tons and tons of people walking on the road to wherever they're going, from one village to another, from the airport to some place, because they don't have a car, they don't have any way to get home. They're walking, and there's no light. So they're walking in the dark, and all you have is your bus lights, the bus lights, and you just see like, oh, there's people, right? And it's the only light.
Wow.
So it's really weird because you keep thinking like, holy crap, if these people take one step to the left, we're going to run them over because we're going 30, 40 miles an hour on this road and there's no lights and they can see us. But like, you know, they're not facing us. It's just very, very bizarre to have an airport road in a major metropolitan area with no lights because they don't have enough electricity to light most of the country.
We've all seen the photos of the satellite photos of South Korea lit up at night and mm-hmm. North Korea.
Just a dead area in the earth. It looks like the Amazon rainforest. There's just nothing there. There's nothing there. There's no lights. There's occasionally Pyongyang will have lights on, but if it's late enough at night, there's not enough to be seen from the sky.
Sure.
Generally.
So is there a particular hotel that you're taken to? Is there one hotel?
Yeah, there's really kind of only one hotel. I mean, there are a few hotels supposedly in North Korea, but they're not, you can't, again, no such thing as unsupervised North Korea. You can't go, hey, you know what? Let's get that hotel that's down by the lake. There's nobody there, right? It's not working. There's probably no employees. The doors are probably locked, right? There's not people just in town. So your tour group usually stays at the Yanggakdo Hotel. And it's a hotel in the middle of the Taedong River. And you are on an island in the river. So yes, it's a hotel and it's got a bowling alley and a hair salon in it or whatever, both of which are normally closed and you have to go have them turn it on for you. But you realize you're on an island, like you're kind of on an Alcatraz-y hotel. You know, there's no way in and out other than the bridge, and the bridge is not big and it's also got a military checkpoint on it. And I've tried to walk across it and they're like, absolutely not. You cannot leave the hotel grounds. And I'm like, wow. Oh, okay. You know, they're not messing around. It's not like, yeah, go take a look at some other stuff and come back. No, it's this is as far as you are allowed to go. And that's when you realize that it's not just for the views that you're on an island in the middle of the river. You're there so that you cannot slip out of the hotel at any time and go meet anyone or deliver anything or see anyone without your tour guides with you. You're not, you just can't do it. And I also asked my North Korean tour guides if North Koreans were allowed on this island, and she said no. She said no.
Wow.
You have to have a permit to go on there, and in order to have the permit, you have to be a tour guide on an active tour. So you even the locals can't just like go fishing on the island while there's tourists in the hotel. It's not allowed. It's basically like a military-restricted area.
I'm fighting the urge. I really want to be the one interviewer in history that doesn't mention George Orwell or 1984.
Yeah, right.
But it's extraordinary to think about the totalitarian regime and how it really is made manifest. So, you know, to that point, obviously so much of the DPRK is centered around a cult of personality, right? Mm-hmm. We have the dear leader, the great leader, etc. I would imagine you'd see his face everywhere. You've already alluded to it with the mural. And I know you had an interesting experience with a magazine that bore, I think it was Kim Jong-il's face and an ashtray when you went to put the magazine cover on it. Yeah, maybe you could run through that.
Lots of little totalitarian cult of personality, crazy stuff like this has happened in North Korea and to me over the years.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-218-6010. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-218-6010. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-218-6010.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
So I took one of the magazines from the airplane, no problem. They're also in the hotel, whatever. And it had Kim Jong-il's face on it. He was the son of the original founder of North Korea, Kim Il-sung. So in most of the magazines do. And I wanted more space on my desk. So I put it on a table. I took the ashtray off the desk, put that on the table. I had some coins. I put those in the ashtray. They were like, you know, Chinese money or whatever. I put a bag on top of that. And these were all on top of the magazine. I thought nothing of it. It was like an issue of Time magazine that you'd already read. Who cares? Sure. Right. Huh. And I also thought maybe I'll take these home. And so I'll keep them in good condition by putting stuff on them that isn't going to damage them, like an ashtray with coins in it in a bag. Well, when I came back to my room, the magazine was gone. And the cleaning staff had come and turned the bed down and all that other stuff. But everything else had been laid on the table where I left it. And I was like, where is the magazine? And the next day, I took more magazines because I wanted them. I found them in the hotel or wherever we got them. I can't quite remember.
Sure.
I took them and I took a stack of two or three and I did the same thing. I put them on the table, but then I put the ashtray back on it because I don't want to take up all the dang real estate in my room. And then when I came back the next day, the magazine were also gone. And I was like, what the hell? So then I thought, oh, I wonder if it's because I put something on top of the magazine. So I got another copy of one of the magazines because now I'm experimenting. And I put it on my desk and I didn't put anything on it or around it. And I put I had another one from my bag, which I put on the table I did not put the ashtray on top of it. I did not put the bag on top of it. And when I came back to my room, they were both there. So that was sort of all I needed to know. They found it offensive that I had put an ashtray on top of their leader's photo. And they had decided that I wasn't allowed to keep the magazine. And I've had similar things like this happen. I was writing something on the airplane. The time I got seated next to a North Korean in the back of the airplane, I needed a pen. He lent me a pen. I started writing on something, but I had folded the newspaper shut. And I started writing on the paper that I had on top of the newspaper. And he said, no. You cannot write. You cannot use the newspaper as a writing surface, even if you're not writing on it, because it will. And he's telling me in Korean, I did not understand what hell he was doing. But basically, he didn't want the pen pressure to damage. It was like a re-entry form for China. You know, I'm not writing a diary entry. It was nothing objectionable to the content that I was writing. He didn't want me to write on the surface that might then dent the photo and make it not reflect all glossy. And because it had Kim Jong-un's face on it.
Wow.
And I was like, geez, man, you guys are ridiculous. They treat every photo of this guy like it's the Shroud of Turin or something. I mean, it's just completely ridiculous.
That's incredible. Just out of curiosity, I don't mean to get speculative, but do you know what would have happened to you if you had defaced it?
On the plane back from China,
yeah.
Probably nothing. I think the guys would have gotten pissed off. The guy next to me probably would have been like, that's not okay. Probably would have taken it. I don't think they'd be like, turn the plane around and arrest this man. But I think they might be like, what's your name? You're not welcome back in North Korea. Wow. Or they would just be like, hey, don't do this. But it's possible they would have been like, you're not allowed to come back ever, which.
Sure.
But I don't think they would be like, we're literally not letting you off the plane. I mean, that would be a little bit like, I don't think that guy literally has the authority to cause an international incident by kidnapping somebody in international or, you know, in foreign airspace. Like, I think he would just go, can I get away with taking an American from China back to North Korea against his will for something like this? Probably not.
Right.
Right. So he would probably just be like, don't do that, and possibly get mad. And also, there's an element of who else saw this. Right. So like, when he saw me doing that, he was just like, no. He wasn't like, hey, everybody, this guy's writing on the picture of the leader. He was just like, yo, no. And I've also had my tour guides do things like, Jordan, don't kneel down in front of the statue to get a photo. Please don't do that. And like kind of looking around like, OK, I don't think anybody else saw that. And I'm like, OK, so it's kind of an element of how performative do they have to be to prove that they're upholding the dignity of the dictator in chief.
I understand. You know, how faithful are they to?
Yeah, like if no one else saw it, they're kind of like, yo, don't do that. You're going to get me in trouble. But if a bunch of people saw it, then it's like, you cannot do this in our land. You know, it's like a whole big thing. And they have to do that because then it's like, well, Mr. Lee saw Jordan sit down in front of the statue and he didn't say anything, or he only said, please stand up. You know, but if he said, Mr. Lee saw Jordan sit down in front of the statue and he erupted in outrage, then they're like, that's a good guy right there. He's very patriotic. You know, it's kind of, it's like that. So everything there is massively performative. You know, it's all about not having somebody rat you out in any credible way to the authorities, basically.
Huh. Interesting. Just to kind of further the conversation there, Jordan, and giving our mutual audience a sense of the, let's call it texture of North Korea. You'll probably be familiar with Christopher Hitchens.
Me? Yes.
Yeah. Yep. So I'm sure you know he was a journalist, and he wrote an article for Vanity Fair, which was called, I think it was called A Visit to a Small Planet, which basically illustrates his visit to North Korea. And he said something, as he called it, visiting a small planet. Your traveling partner, Gabe, said something very similar. He told you, I'm going to quote him. He told you it's one of the last few places where you truly feel that you are in some other dimension that is stuck in space and time to some degree, end quote. Mm-hmm. Do you have any words or sentences you'd like to get in regarding that point?
Yeah, I mean, it's completely correct. Like when you, I was born in the 80s, but I would imagine if you were born in the 70s or the 60s, you'd have an even more clear image of what this means. So when you go there, first of all, the fashion in North Korea is circa 1950. And I'm not exaggerating like, oh, look, they're wearing bell bottoms. I mean, they are literally wearing office attire that you would expect to have seen in the West / Korea in 1950 or 1960 Korea. You know, women do not wear pants. They they wear skirts that are knee length. People do not wear non-communist attire. You know, they all wear the same kinds of like workers' shirts. Maybe they have a suit. It depends what they're doing. They all have similar hats. Everybody wears the pin. Like, it's not a place where you can be individual. There are certain haircuts that are approved. I'm sure you've heard this.
Yeah.
So there's not even the ability to go and get things that would make you different, if that makes any sense. The ability to be fashionable in any way is removed from, there's no commerce, there's no capitalism, really. I mean, there's very little capitalism, really. And so when you're walking down the road, the stores are not open for business. There's stores that have things. Usually they all carry the same thing. Like it'll be bottles of soju, which is like a rice wine, but they're dusty. The lights are off. They're all pushed up towards the front of the display window. There's not a bunch of bottles behind them. The door is locked. The retail real estate is not in use. You know, this is a dusty place where they store. It's a Potemkin type of thing. No one's in there. And if you went in there to buy that product, they wouldn't. I mean, you couldn't get in there. The door's locked, right? It's like a closed thing that's designed to look sort of open, but not, they're not worried about fooling you too much. And there are things that are open, but like, this is a different point, I suppose. But yeah, the sort of 1950s thing is real. And the automobiles are all old. They've rigged trucks to run on burning wood and coal. Because
really?
They don't get gasoline, and they go very slowly, and there's a guy sitting on the back next to a fire barrel that's like throwing wood in it as the truck sort of like chugs along the highway. 10-lane highways that are in total disrepair, people pushing rocks into them in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it's just wild. But it is frozen in time by both the decor, the fashion, the attitude of the people as well. There's museums that you go to where it's the Korean War might have ended yesterday in their mind, except for this person that's telling you this is born in 1985, right? And they're, we are defending ourselves against the American imperialists. And it's like, someone should tell her that nobody in America is thinking about this place other than the fact that it's a menace with their nukes. But it's not like, I mean, they are displaying war trophies that are from 1967. You know, boats and planes and stuff. And I'm like, this is not a thing Americans are concerned about. It's like a huge point of pride for them. This is what we got from the United States. You know, we're still at war with them. And it's like, oh, for crying out loud, nobody's, you know, you're irrelevant on the world stage.
Thanks, Jordan. Keeping an eye on our time, I have maybe like just a couple questions left. Is that cool? So, Jordan, I'd love to know, can you talk about your visit to the demilitarized zone?
Yeah, the DMZ. So yes, this is a really interesting place because it's what you see, what most people say, like, oh, I've been to North Korea. And you go, oh, really? And they go, yeah, I was in that blue house and I stepped across the line. I'm like, okay, so you haven't really been to North Korea. You've been there, like, technically, as in this. It's like when you do a layover at an airport and you go, I've been to South Africa. Cool. Right. 'Cause you picked a layover there that was 20 minutes long and you went to the bathroom somewhere in Cape Town. Like, that doesn't really count. So when you go there, there's a million checkpoints because they don't want normal people to be able to get anywhere near this thing. Well, it's a military checkpoint. It's probably the same in the South. I haven't been to South Korea, so I don't know. But you get there, there's all kinds of places that explain things about the war. And then as you get towards the line, there are tank barricades and things to keep, frankly, North Koreans from running a car or truck over the border. Because the best way to defect would be to get a hold of a car, stolen or otherwise, like a bus that you're in with a bunch of tourists, and slam on the damn gas and just go straight over the border and push stop only when you get into South Korea. If hopefully they won't open fire on you, right? Because otherwise you got to cross a minefield or get in the water or something like that, which is not going to end well for you. So you're going through the tank barricades. They say the tank barricades are there to keep the South from running into the North. That's partially true. I think a lot of it is to keep the North from running their own trucks and cars into the South. You get there, there's a couple of houses or buildings. The North Korean soldiers are usually like doing some marching and things like that to show off. It's a very tense area. And then when you get to these buildings, you can look over the top of the border and you can see the Americans and the South Koreans standing there, which is just surreal, right? Because they're standing there in the like ready stance with their aviators on and their helmets, and they're looking across the border, and they only pick tall South Koreans, and there'll be like an American observer standing there looking around. There's a guy in a tower looking around. They have an observation post. The side on the north is old, and there's binoculars. You can sort of like look across and stuff like that.
Sure.
And huge flags. But you really do, and you can go in those houses too from the north, and they will block the door of the other end of the house, because there's doors on both sides for discussions between the two sides. They haven't been used for decades, but they're touristy now. And you can't have tourists from both sides in at the same time. And I can't remember exactly how it was, but the North Koreans are very sort of strangely, like there's two guys blocking the door, but it's almost like they're just looking to make sure the other guy doesn't run through the door, right? There's a little element of that. The South Korean soldiers will look in the windows when you're in there sometimes. I don't really know what that's all about. They have encouraged us to make obscene gestures towards those guys while we're in there, which is a little weird. some people take them up on it. Other people don't. I'm not going to flip off a South Korean soldier, you know, especially because that guy might be the only, you know, you never know. You might be running across there and be like, you, and he might be like, I don't see anything. Right. So, it's just an interesting, intense area. And like a lot of times when the North Koreans are out, the South Koreans and the Americans will go back in their building. And sometimes when there's tourists on the south side, the North Koreans will all go back into their building. And I don't 100% understand why. I've asked about that. They say it's mostly a coincidence. I think it's kind of like one side doesn't want to perform for the other side's tourists. I think there's a little bit of that.
You don't want to be a circus act kind of thing.
Yeah. What's really interesting is when you're there and the North Koreans are marching, they are not messing around. Like they will look at you and be like, get in there. You know, they're like, get out of the way. And they're making you go in the house. They don't want you to stand around and dilly dally. And I have a feeling it's because of tourists, you know, doing stupid things, getting in the way, making them look bad, possibly getting too close to the border and making them nervous. Because what happens if somebody runs across the border? It's not going to be like, you silly kid, get back over here. I mean, it's like, you can't go back in. Then what? You're like, you just defect. You're a tourist. You can't defect, but you kind of like, you crossed an international demilitarized zone. What the hell are they going to do? And I don't know what the protocols are. I don't think anybody's ever like been stupid enough to do that, but they can't hand you back through there. They're not going to do it. So it's a whole tense area. It's like, there's not a lot of messing around. But what's really interesting is if you have your phone on you, they do let you come in with your phone now, or at least they do sometimes, I should say. But now the last few times I've gone, I've had my phone. I'll sort of turn my phone on silent, turn it on. And like, you start getting all these text messages because you're roaming in South Korea, right? You're 20 feet away. And so you start getting voicemails and texts and your emails updating. It's pretty funny. I'll do a video from the last place they'll let you film, and then I'll just send it or upload it to iCloud from my phone. And I'm like, ask more questions, because they're like, all right, let's go. And I'm like, no. How many square meters is this building? And they're like, oh, hold on, let me ask. And I'm like, leaning all the way towards South Korea from the railing, like, how much faster can this go? Because it's like on 3G mode, you know?
Sure.
So it's just kind of funny to see that. And then you see your texts going out, like, I'm in North Korea. Like, hey, you know, sending out photos. So it's kind of funny because you couldn't roam before. Now I think you can buy internet for your phone in North Korea, tourists only, and it will only, you know, you can't call people inside North Korea, et cetera. It's just sort of like using expensive data roaming, and it's very limited. So yeah, the place is really locked in a time warp, but it's the most totalitarian control anywhere, right? They want to control what you think. They want to control what you see. North Korean guides are not allowed in on the floors where your rooms are. And part of the reason for that is we get Japanese and English TV channels and they don't. And the rooms are a vastly different quality, of course. So it's just very interesting.
Two questions left. I don't want to abuse your time. I really appreciate you taking it.
No worries.
Yeah. So, you know, one question I wanted to ask you, and I never thought in a million years I'd be asking this, let alone getting an answer. But did you have a favorite place in North Korea that you went to?
That's a good question. It's not super well maintained. There's not a whole lot of like, oh, this is a really nice beach, you know? And then when it is a nice beach, it's like, but the food is terrible.
Right.
Or it's like, this is kind of a funny hotel, but nothing's great about it because the food's old and it's, you know. So, I mean, there's interesting stuff like the DMZ. There's interesting stuff like the museums you go to, but there's nothing where I'm like, wow, they really do this right. You know, it's there's nothing like that. There's a shortage of everything.
Sure.
There's not a particular place where you say, man, this would be so great if I could just stay a few more days in this place. There's just not anything like that. And there's a reason that in totalitarian regimes and oppressive regimes, the leaders are always going on vacation in Italy and France because they've made a mess of their own country and they can't, there's nothing for them there. I'm sure their homes are nice and have imported stuff all over the place, but like going, there's no like central shopping district where there's fun restaurant. Like that doesn't exist at all, even in their main city. So no, not really.
Right. That's sort of what I was expecting, but I wanted to go ahead and ask. This was a blast, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, my pleasure, man.
Yeah, Jordan Harbinger, how can people find out about you?
The Jordan Harbinger Show, H-A-R-B-I-N-G-E-R, is my podcast. I talk a lot more about North Korea and other travels to other places, but also I interview amazing people about everything from, you know, I interview mobsters to CEOs, so I would love it. To pimps, yeah, to see if, and I like to get useful bits that the audience can use in their own life, you know, even if they're not pimping. So yeah, the Jordan Harbinger Show or at jordanharbinger.com. That works for me too.
Excellent, man. Thank you again so much for your time, Jordan. I really appreciate it.
You got it, man. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information on eyewitness history, along with show notes and links to resources, go to parthenonpodcast.com, where you can also listen to some other great podcasts by the Parthenon Network, such as Scott Rank's History Unplugged, Steve Guerra's Beyond the Big Screen, and James Early's Key Battles of American History, along with many others. Thank you.
The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.